45. The human soul and its boundaries, the range of human inner experiences so far attained, the heights, depths, and extent of these experiences, the whole history of the soul up to this point, and its still undrained possibilities. For a born psychologist and lover of the great hunt, that is the predestined hunting ground. But how often must such a man say to himself in despair, "I'm just one man, alas, only one man, and this is a huge wood, a primordial forest." And so he wishes he could have few hundred helpers in the hunt, and finely trained hunting dogs, which he could drive into the history of the human soul, in order to corner his wild animal there. A vain hope. He experiences over and over again, thoroughly and bitterly, how difficult it is to find helpers and hounds for all things which appeal to his curiosity. The worst thing about sending scholars out into new and dangerous hunting grounds, where courage, intelligence, and a refinement of every sense are necessary, is that that's precisely the place where scholars are no longer useful, where the great hunt, but also the great danger, begins. Right there they lose their eyes and noses for hunting. In order to ascertain and to establish, for example, what sort of history the problem of knowledge and conscience in the soul of the homines religiosi, religious men, has had up to now, the individual would himself perhaps have to be as profound as wounded and as monstrous as the intellectual conscience of Pascal. And then it would still be necessary to have that expansive heaven of bright, malicious spirituality capable of surveying this teeming mass of dangerous and painful experiences from above, of ordering it, and of forcing it into formulas. But who would perform this service for me? And who would have time to wait for such servants? It's clear they arise too rarely. In all ages they are so unlikely. In the end, a person must do everything himself in order to know a few things himself. That means that one has much to do. But at all events, a curiosity of the sort I have remains the most pleasant of all burdens. Forgive me, I wanted to say this. The love of the truth has its reward in heaven and even on earth. 46. The faith demanded and not rarely attained by early Christianity in the midst of a sceptical and southern world of free spirits that had behind and within it a centuries-long battle among philosophical schools, in addition to the education in tolerance provided by the Imperium Romanum, Roman Empire, this faith is not that naive and gruff faith of the subordinate, something like the faith with which a Luther or a Cromwell, or some other northern barbarian of the spirit, hung on to his God and his Christianity. That earlier faith resonates much more with Pascal's belief, which looks, in a terrifying way, something like a constant suicide of reason, a tenacious, long-lived, worm-like reason, which cannot be killed once and for all with a single blow. From the start, Christian faith has been a sacrifice. A sacrifice of all freedom, all pride, all inherent certainty about one's own spirit, and at the same time slavery and self-mockery, self-mutilation. There is cruelty and a religious Phoenicianism in this faith, which one expects in a crumbling, multi-layered, and very spoilt conscience. Its assumption is that the subjection of the spirit is indescribably painful, that the entire past and the habits of such a spirit resist the absurdissimum, the most extreme absurdity, which is how he encounters this faith. Modern people, with their insensitivity to all Christian nomenclature, don't sense any more the ghastly superlative that lay in the paradox of the formula God on the cross for the taste of classical antiquity. To this point, there has never yet been anywhere such an audacious reversal, anything as dreadful, questioning, and questionable as this formula. It promised an inversion of all ancient values. It is the Orient, the deep Orient, it is the Oriental slave who in this way took his revenge on Rome and its noble and frivolous tolerance, on the Roman Catholicity of faith. And what always enraged the slaves about their masters and against their masters was not their faith, but their freedom from faith, that half-stoic, smiling lack of concern about the seriousness of belief. Enlightenment fills people with rage, for the slave wants something absolute. He understands only the tyrannical, even in morality. He loves, as he hates, without subtlety, to the depths, to the point of pain, to the point of sickness. His many hidden sufferings grow incensed against the noble taste which seems to deny suffering. The scepticism against suffering, basically only an attitude of aristocratic morality, was also not the most insignificant factor in the origin of the last great slave revolt, which began with the French Revolution.